Welcome to the Visegrad Insight podcast from Central Europe on Central Europe.
On Monday, 29th of April, EU affairs ministers will gather in the evening in Brussels for a special dinner. The dinner will be celebrating 20 years anniversary of the enlargement, the Big Bang enlargement, which welcomed in the membership as members of the Union countries of Central Eastern Europe. And at the same time, the discussion of the dinner will be how to uphold the rule of law in the future Union. And it will be focused on the discussion on the upcoming EU strategic agenda. While this discussion takes place in Brussels, we are connecting myself from a beautiful lake spot in the north of Poland, Lake Dąbrówno, a space of quiet and nature during the long weekend in Poland, the so-called Majówka, when nearly all of Warsaw is away and all of the cities in Poland go to the nature and to enjoy the 1st of May and 3rd of May, big celebrations in Poland. And I'm joined, my name is Wojciech Przybylski, editor-in-chief of Visegrad Insight, and I'm joined by Albin Sibera, Visegrad Insight editor, connecting from... Where are you, Albin?
I'm not as lucky as you, although I'm also in an interesting natural landscape in the Czech Republic. I'm in a region called Vysočina between Bohemia and Moravia. But I'm, as I said, I'm not as lucky as you because I'm inside. I'm not in the open nature.
Yeah, and speaking of not open nature, if you hear birds chumming in the background or a bit of wind, hopefully not too much for your ears. These are additional bonus distractions of that special Polish long weekend. But back to EU affairs and the enlargement. On Friday, we have published an interview with a former Czech Prime Minister, Mr. Spidla, who was also a EU commissioner, and as the leader of Czech Republic, he was overseeing the entry of Czech Republic into the European Union. Albin and I have talked to him both on the challenges of present day and the future of the European Union, but also more specifically on the differences and similarities of the approach to European affairs from the two capitals, Warsaw and Prague. Albin, would you like to characterize the main points of the interview, so to encourage our listeners to reflect on what Mr. Spidla said?
Sure. I think Mr. Spidla made a couple of powerful points. One that I would probably highlight is how the countries in Central Europe, Poland and Czech Republic, but also to some extent also Slovakia and Hungary, how they still fail to grasp that the EU is probably, or not probably, but likely the best tool they have at their disposal to further their own interests. And he pointed out, obviously, the Russian aggression in Ukraine and the climate change, which to respond to on the national level is simply insufficient, to say the least. And then any meaningful response needs to involve coordinated efforts of countries. And this is something also which historically the Central European countries never had an opportunity that the EU is providing. And I think he was very correct in assessing that there is still room in the domestic politics of the four countries to take a more effective approach and use the EU, the tools that the EU has at its disposal better. He also highlighted the defense capabilities, pointing out that what EU has at its disposal is something with which it can defend itself. What it's lacking is the political will and the ability to shape its policy so it's effectively responding to the current challenges.
Yeah, and at this point, we observe that it is nearly one-on-one, copy-paste or kind of in tune with what the current Prime Minister of Poland says, Donald Tusk, essentially says, Europe has all the might and all the wealth to shape its destiny, to shape its security. What it lacks is a coordinated will to actually employ those means in to its advantage in the context of the war in Ukraine, but also in the context of a globally deteriorating situation, strategic situation for Europe, including the the increased, really ugly competition with China that was absent 20 years ago. Who talked about China? Then there is a number of conflicts generated by other powers except Russia in the Middle East, Iran. But a number of challenges also are coming with the rise of the fears of the climate change across the globe and real changes of the climate and the access to the natural resources, the changes in the type of production, the competition, economic competition primarily, but that translates into state competition, in which Europe has a unique position, but this position will not be guaranteed unless there is some action taken. But then we ask him also about the differences in the Czech and Polish perspective. How would Albin? I'll give it back to you to narrate Mr. Spindler's argument.
I think this was an interesting point of the interview because here Mr. Spindler was also relating to his own experience as a prime minister and a first-hand experience, really. And what I think he pointed out, and which has been pointed out elsewhere as well, is that simply the Czech Republic, as much as it's and it's very true today, appearing to be aligned along Warsaw's orientation and interests, it doesn't have the capacity, the size of Poland, and it's still on the EU level is making the difference. That as much as the Czechs perhaps would like to stand along the poles, so to speak, it's hard when you have a population that's approximately one quarter of that of Polish population.
I think it's not just the size of the population that makes a difference, the potential of the country itself, but also a certain political culture that comes not only with size, but certain ambition, is also different. I recall from the interview quite a very precise, I would say, the analysis he makes, saying that Poland has always wanted to be in the leadership of the Europe. He used the word directorate as a, you know, in quotation marks, quote unquote directorate here, by which he means probably the big countries like France and Germany and Poland having this lesser potential than those, but at the same time, much higher ambition than the countries, than most of the countries of Central Eastern Europe. And that that situates Poland in a different spot in which it tries to play politics in different ways than Czech Republic and how Czech Republic does it. And I think in that context, for Czech Republic, it is even more striking how Czech Republic is underscoring the rule of law and the protection of the rights of every member state and society in Europe. This is the perspective of smaller countries that constitute the United Project of Europe, correct?
I think one thing that I would also point out from the interview when discussing the Polish role in Central Europe is that how Poland is, I suppose, also struggling in how to be a voice, a regional voice for other countries, without exploiting this and without making other countries feel like they're sort of behind Poland in a way.
And is it succeeding?
It's definitely a good question. I think there's definitely this I would perhaps say a fear of Poland having these sort of, I don't want to use the word imperialist, but let's say leadership qualities. And I think this was certainly the case under the previous cabinet of Law and Justice Party, and I think what I think the current administration of Donald Tusk has at its disposal is essentially an opportunity to do this right way. If I were to speak idealistically a little bit and optimistically, you know, looking at the sunshine in the background and the lake that's looking so optimistic and from a Polish perspective.
At the same time, there are voices raised that while Mr. Tusk's government prioritizes the Weimar cooperation, and we're going to speak about it in a minute, referring to both the Sorbonne 2.0 speech by President Macron, the discourse on Europe, as the Palace of Champs-Élysées calls it, and on the other hand, the delivery of the annual address on the Polish foreign policy priorities that has been there in the Polish Parliament for the first time, and it was delivered by the Minister Radoslav Sikorski, both of whom spoke at length about the priorities, European priorities, but also this cooperation within Europe between the countries like France, Germany, and Poland, and with much less emphasis on collaboration within the region of South of Central Europe, and especially with southern partners of the Visegrad group. It was quite noticeable that was tuned down in comparison to decades of Polish foreign policy annual addresses of the ministers in subsequent parliaments. And I hear these voices quite a lot in Central Eastern Europe. There is a sense of certain discomfort between the capitals of countries from Baltics to many others in Central Europe, stating that Poland priority on the Weimar Triangle, which is a historical opportunity, and we spoke at a number of occasions on this podcast, and we wrote about why and how it is important and how it is how this opportunity is being exercised by the new Polish government. It brings about again this tension within Central Europe between Poland and other countries. And that's, I think this is clearly felt also in the current Czech government or other governments. Although Czech government seems to be mentioned specifically by the Polish government and as the government that is like-minded and because of that stays in the priority of the Polish foreign policy.
I think in this we also see echoes of the situation in the V4 platform, if there is still a V4 platform. As while we have seen more than a decade of Hungary being increasingly more and more isolated under the leadership of its strongman Viktor Orban, we have also seen in the past half a year the astonishing return to power of Robert Fico in Slovakia. And this time, Fico has categorically rebranded himself along the lines of Viktor Orban. And he's probably surprised even seasoned observers of Slovak politics in how quickly he's increasing his grip on power in Slovakia. And just this week, we've seen the cabinet approval of the legislation aimed at essentially dismantling of the public broadcaster, which euphemistically they call it restructuring and establishing of a new public broadcaster. But in effect, this means that they will get rid of the management of the public broadcaster in Bratislava and will have more of a say in installing their own management of the public broadcaster. So all these developments naturally lead to the impression that it's Prague and Warsaw on board, while Bratislava is increasingly drifting towards Budapest. However, we also have to, I would say, keep in mind that even for Warsaw and Prague, this poses not just challenges regionally, but also domestically. And this would perhaps be one of the questions that I would ask you, Wojciech. We've seen the PKN Orlen scandal unfolding for a couple of weeks, but I think the latest twist this week with its former CEO Daniel Wojtek and his comments on how he's made nothing while being a CEO on PKN Orlen, I think that sort of hinted at the internal conflicts that also the current cabinet of Donald Tusk is facing. Am I right?
Well, there is hardly any internal conflict regarding Mr. Obajtek, former CEO of the biggest oil company, state-owned company in Poland. The gentleman is out of his job. He has accumulated unprecedented wealth, having previously been not an experienced manager in any sense. In any way, I mean, in many ways, he is a little bit a Lawrence Mesaros of Polish politics. Lawrence Mesaros, formerly a mayor of a hometown of Mr. Orban, represents the type of kind of local activist who is a symbol of those who are loyal to the regime or to the illiberal forces that shape the new state capture. And because of his story of making it from rages to riches, from someone who was very entrepreneurial, definitely on his own while being a mayor, but whose abilities have been boosted and his wealth has been many times multiplied, is an example of for those that PIS in Poland, but also many others in other capitals of Central Europe, would like to bribe and use it as an example of transforming power of this mafia state type of politics. Mr. Obajtek is now going to run for member of European Parliament in the upcoming elections. While there are unfolding scandals, discovered multi-billion euro scandals for paying money for services or for goods that were never delivered, money lost in the international system, with a clear question whether it was incompetence or a scheme to wash some money and put it in part of that money spent on behalf of the public company, essentially taxpayer money company, taxpayer money making company, or it should be that, and whether or not it was not privatized informally and illegally for the profits of individuals or the party system that wants to come back. So Mr. Obajtek and the PKN Orlen case, the trouble of winning back the companies and agencies and institutions of democratic country is something we should really have in focus. We are actually putting more focus on what's going on in Poland exactly because of that, exactly because we know from the example of Slovakia that if it is messed up, if things go badly in recapturing the country from the type of mafia politics that has been ruling in the past, the consequences are severe. And the second coming of state capture by the same people who once were ousted by the public comes at a greater speed with a much bigger resolve, and the determination must be there on behalf of those who may hold a democratic mandate to restore rule of law. And that leads me to the commentary on Mr. Sikorski, who was extremely political in his speech in the Polish parliament, giving the annual foreign policy address. And it was also countered by unprecedented performance of President Duda, who took the stage right after using his presidential privileges in a parliamentary debate, and countered him no less in a partisan way and with political messaging. I will not now go into details of how many lies there were in what President was trying to depict as normality, referring to the past 8 years, which everybody know were not normal, at least not for normal people and the citizens of Poland who didn't want PIS to continue in its mission of governing the country. But Mr. Sikorski instead, he had a number of points. He called them myths of PIS foreign policy. And he addressed those myths at large in the speech, which is, again, unusual for democratically elected foreign ministers to go at length at certain assumptions of the foreign policy of its predecessors. But he also wanted to make a sharp distinction between his foreign policy priorities and the foreign policy priorities of the governments he represents, and what he basically audited throughout the period of the past 8 years, having then earlier been even closely related to PIS. He was previously in previous PIS government minister of defense, so he would, you know, so one could say he knows those people intimately, very well. He essentially went one by one about every myth of foreign policy of PIS, including those assumptions on Central Europe, including those assumptions about what Poland is in Europe, to elevate his ambition of making foreign policy of Poland at the cornerstone of the European policy and a future strategic agenda. This is very important, and I want to take one more or two more minutes to highlight, because as he spoke on Thursday, and there was also a speech by President Macron, to which I referred earlier, who also spoke on the priorities of the European Union, which include the analysis, maybe not like Mr. Sikorski of domestic opponents to the priorities set by President Macron, but the opposition to the project of greater and united and in future enlarged Europe. And the priorities were not so new, not so, you wouldn't be surprised, but they were stated and recapitulated with force, with some eloquence also, which is a particular feature of the French president, as he's often referred to as a think tanker in chief, with many ideas that are setting the path forward. And they were reinvigorating the discussion of something we also put a lot of emphasis on, which is the future EU strategic agenda, a document, essentially a short document with points and lists of priorities that is being shaped as we speak, has been started to be shaped last year around Granada summit. And initially it involved priorities on economic securities alone or economic security alone, but is now, according to the leaks that we've seen and also commented, having a strong emphasis on security in Europe, which is understood also by enlarging Europe, pushing forward the priority of enlarging the European Union and countering malign influence, but also specifically taking the points on migration and taking the points on or setting new priorities around production and purchases of defense and standing by Ukraine. This is the first pillar of the strategic agenda that is now not simply a document that is to be adopted and implemented by the Commission, but is a political discussion. And this is why it is so important that the discussion on Europe takes place now, and it is being referred by the top leaders of the countries which are in the spotlight of European politics of today, whose leaders set the ambitions and whose electoral results also shape the temperature in the room, at least, and then the ambitions of the others in the European Union. I mean, if we look around the European Union of today, there is President Macron, who politically is going to be the stable element of French politics, but his party is going to go down and is expected to take the third place in the upcoming European parliamentary elections. There is Mr. Sanchez of other big countries, who maybe we learn very soon is not continuing on his mission as the Prime Minister of Spain. Mr. Scholz, going different lengths to secure German interests, but also satisfy the coalition priorities that are self-conflicting, internally conflicted. And then there is Poland, with a clear mindset and leadership, very welcome across all EU member states, that is also pushing hard for its national interests, like the issue of migration and border control or support for Ukraine, but is able to translate it now to European interests, something that the previous governments was unable to do. And that also gives its words and its political priorities and declarations such a weight in the context of the discussions that are taking place on Monday, this Monday, in Brussels among EU affairs ministers and the others. And I think that the last important point I wanted to highlight is that while Poland is definitely growing back to this big role, it is perhaps missing a bit from the focus it is entitled and obliged to take on Central Eastern Europe. Sikorski was mentioning the question of collaboration in Central Eastern Europe. He mentioned that there is a alignment on security, quite naturally, between Nordic and Eastern Europe, at least those members of Nordic North and Eastern Europe that have a similar mindset on Russia, which includes Nordic states, now members of NATO, Baltic states, quite naturally, Czech Republic, and Romania. But then when mentioning Visegrad Group format, I think Romania and Bulgaria, to be frankly, I mean, I have to look back at the speech, but I think Bulgaria was also mentioned. And then he went to Visegrad Group and he said, well, no more of the community of political influence in the European Union. It's just a pure game of interest if the members of the Visegrad Group congregation want to pursue common interests, which include energy sector, which include transportation, logistics, building up long-term ambition of North and South connectivity, and maybe something else, but purely driven by common interest, identified by all countries, then it's fine. But it's not going to be a pack of brotherhood, you know, kind of the band that played along in the past between Warsaw and Budapest, even though Mr. Morawiecki has joined the Putinist summit in Budapest at the same time last week. And he spoke at length to Viktor Orban and others who have not such a big problem with embracing Mr. Putin in his takeover of Ukraine. So I think that the time is really important for those speeches around the anniversary, around what we discussed initially with Mr. Spidla interview as well. And that's what we shall continue to monitor and discuss. But also, I think important to say advocate in the agenda that while the big security and geopolitical priorities are included, the foundation of our security is our democratic principles and values, commitments to the rule of law, for instance, which guarantee that members like Czech Republic and many other Central Eastern European states and other smaller member states of European Union across the whole continent feel that they are protected from pure national interests and certain, the self-centeredness of the bigger players. Correct me if I'm wrong here, Albin.
I think you've just showed why Poland, if under correct leadership, can be an instrumental country in the region in many ways. Most notably, of course, as you mentioned, the security element. And maybe if we have any time left, I think this should also be of importance to Poland. If you look at the countries in the region, Czech Republic is facing elections next year, and much of what we've discussed in terms of how the populist politicians are essentially another word for a kleptocratic regime. I think what we're going to see in the next couple of months will be an effort on the domestic front in the Czech Republic to revive this rhetoric, because this is essentially what brought Mr. Fiala to power 3 years ago when he narrowly ousted the former Czech prime minister and the populist billionaire Andrej Babiš. But who's back on pulse, much like Robert Fico was last year in Slovakia, and he's making it quite clear that he's been encouraged by Fico's victory in Slovakia, and that he would like to be back in government, possibly even with the far right party, even though some other members of his party have dismissed this option. In any case, if we look at the pulse right now on the Czech pulse, it looks like any kind of a government will be hard to form without him on board, and that's also quite challenging for a possible future in the Central Europe.
So lessons for Poland here, also from Czech Republic, are you should not wait until the last moment to go hard on the populists, because otherwise it might be just too late. And with this optimistic note, we're closing this podcast episode. Thank you very much, Albin Sibera and Wojciech Przybylski. That was Visegrad Insight Podcast. Do recommend our podcast if you liked it. Share it on your favorite social media. Give it a 5-star rating on your podcast platform. And be in touch. Stay tuned. We'll be back again shortly. Next episode coming up in a week.